It's the Musical Theater Book Club. Let's talk about a show. Welcome to Musical Theater Book Club, where we talk about our favorite musicals, our least favorite musicals, and everything in between. I'm Berkeley.
I'm Sarah.
And today we're talking about Hello, Dolly. I recently have discovered, I know it's one of your favorites, though.
Yeah, and I wish I could say that I've known it for a long time, but I saw it when it was on the tour, so I think like 2019, like early 2019, and I just fell in love with it. And I've said before that I'm not a fan of older musicals. There's like two that I really, really love, and this is one of them. And I just remember seeing it, and I was like, this is amazing. Like, and since then, it's not only is it my favorite older musical, like it's probably in my top 10 favorite musicals.
Out of curiosity, you said there's a second show, old show, that you like. What is it?
Know that. I mean, if people follow our TikTok account, they would probably know Gypsy.
Oh, duh. Okay.
Love it. I mean, that one was also a nostalgia thing because, like, I watched that one with my mom a bunch, so.
I forgot. That came up in my life yesterday. I don't remember how, but I remember thinking about it. Yeah, no, this is one of those shows that I feel, especially in theater, you grow up kind of hearing about. But I never was really compelled to look into it until we were talking, we started listening to shows on a more regular basis. So Hello, Dolly is by Jerry Herman and Michael Stewart. Jerry Herman did the music and lyrics, and Michael Stewart did the book. Just sort of a quick synopsis for you. The musical follows the story of Dolly Levi, a matchmaker, as she travels to Yonkers, New York, to find a match for the well-known, unmarried, half-a-millionaire Horace Vandergeld. Vandergelder. There it is. We got there eventually. Obviously, there's a bunch. It's one of those older shows. And older shows tend to have, like, This is something I've noticed recently, that newer shows will have, like, one main plot, and we stick to that. And there'll be some little outliers and stuff like that. But older shows, especially Golden Age shows, will have that main plot, but then have, like, subplots around.
That's true, yeah. Because this one also followed Cornelius and Barnaby and like all their shenanigans, and I mean interwebs, like they go, you know, obviously they connect at the end, but yeah, it does kind of go back and forth between the two stories.
Yeah, which I like. I think it has to do with what an audience can maintain, and that's sort of why it's changed over time. Plus you focus on one plot, you can really elaborate on that one plot. Anyways, that's not what we're here to talk about. Speaking of the plot though, it's had a really elaborate history, which I thought was really interesting. So it originated in 1835 in the play A Day Well Spent by John Oxenford. It's an English play. And then Johann Nestroy adapted this into his play Einen Jew will er sich machen. I took German in college. I know German. That was close. Then Thornton Wilder adapted it in 1938 to his play The Merchant of Yonkers, which flopped. So he revised it and released it as The Merchant in 1955. And then finally, we get to Hello, Dolly in 1964?
Yeah.
Okay. Ooh. I forgot. I thought I wrote it down, but I don't see it. One thing I thought was interesting was how the show just sort of had a struggle to try to get started.
There was, like, the struggle at the beginning, and then once it made it, it went.
Yeah. It blew up. So one thing that sort of had me dying was how they struggled to get Dolly and they struggled to get a director. Everyone was like, nope. Like, literally, Carol Channing and Grauer Champion, Carol Channing, the original Dolly, and then Grauer Champion, the original director, were like third and fourth choices.
What I love too is I love that, like, Ethel Merman and Mary Martin, who were their top one and two choices, ended up coming back and playing at some point. So I think that just kind of shows, like, how it did end up taking over, that they did come back and end up playing it. Because originally it was written specifically for Ethel Merman.
Mm-hmm. The other thing that I think blew my mind as I was doing research is the time frame of when this show happened. I always think it's a lot older than it is. Because they bring up the original director they wanted was Hal Prince. And I'm like, sometimes the time frame, the 60s and 70s are really weird for me in musical theater. I forget that, like, you know, Hello, Dolly, which I feel is more of like a 40s show, 40s, maybe 50s. It's actually a 60s show. And it Not that any of that really matters. It just is, it blows my mind to think about.
No, I know. I mean, last week we did, you know, the history of Broadway. And if you think about it, Broadway, like what we know and shows that we know kind of started in the 30s. So it's about 90 years old. So it does kind of seem almost unfair to have this like split division of like, well, this is an old show and this is a new show, because really it should be in at least three parts of like, this is like old Broadway and this is like middle Broadway and this is new Broadway, because yeah, it's the same thing. Like I consider Hello Dolly an old show, but it's like, it's not in the same category as Anything Goes.
Yeah, exactly. They also struggled with their out-of-town tryouts, which I thought was interesting. They made some changes, one of which was before the parade passes by. And when we start getting to talking, when we talk about the music, we'll get into all of that drama, because I was here for that drama. I was dying. Also, I thought that was interesting that they changed the name of it, like, 20 times. Not 20 times.
I love how they got to their name, too. Yeah, so it was originally Dolly, a damn exasperating woman, which I kind of love that title. Like, I love Hello, Dolly, but I'm like, that is quite a title. Mm-hmm. And then they changed it to Call on Dolly, which is also the first song after the overture. And then Louis Armstrong recorded a version of Hello, Dolly, which is really, really pretty. I don't know if you listened to it. It was just kind of a nice, like, listening back to those music with the trumpets and all that. And so they changed the name to Hello Dolly because of that.
And then obviously all these changes that they made, and we'll get, like I said, we'll get into a little of the changes. Obviously all these changes worked out because it ended up being an extremely successful show and what was the longest running musical for a good chunk of time. I didn't see what took it out. Did you?
God, I saw, I think it said Fiddler on the Roof.
Oh.
I think is what I read, but I can't remember if that's true or not.
I would not have expected that it to be Fiddler.
I was just going to say, it's at number 20 right now on the list, which seems kind of low, but I mean, that's still above shows like Hamilton. So that shows, like, it's still up there on running. And I mean, it's been revived, what, four times, I think, on Broadway, three times on Broadway.
Yeah.
Well, it was supposed to be revived this year on West End, so it would have been its second time on West End. Had an Australia tour, a bunch of international tours.
Yeah, that's what I think sort of blew my mind, because it's not something I would have expected to have the outreach that it did around the world, but it's had a huge outreach. Like, I mean, they've had two productions in Argentina, two productions in Mexico, Israel, Canada, and Cuba have all had a production. Canada's not so weird, but Cuba is a strange one. That is, and Israel too. Those ones both surprised me. And then they also did a USO tour in 1965, where they took it to Japan, Korea, and Vietnam, which is awesome. The one thing that I thought was really interesting, too, with their performances is that the second production, like professional production, was Australia. Like, it went to Australia before the West End, which I think is interesting. But yeah, and it's been revived so many times. I don't think the West End has had any tours, but I know we've had a couple. And then obviously the movie with Barbara Streisand. So I feel like one of the biggest things with Hello Dolly is you have to talk about the dollies. Like, it's required. I feel like that's always a huge thing. So, I mean, some of Broadway's most famous women have played Dolly Levi. So we have to talk about them. So obviously we have already mentioned the original is Carol Channing, which honestly, until this research, I had never really listened to her a lot. I know her name. I could, if somebody did a caricature of her, I would know that if they were doing her. But I was listening to the original Broadway cast recording and I was like, wow, okay. It's a thing. However, she cracks me up and I would love to see her live. I'd love to see her play Dolly. She has also played it in the West End, and then she also did two of the Broadway revivals as well. So she's done it. She gets around with with Dolly. What the fuck was that? Leave that in there. That's
funny. Oh, definitely.
Good.
I think we talked about that during Anything Goes, too, about how, especially with these older shows, people kind of stay with it for a long time. So I thought that was really cool that she stayed with it for so much and constantly came back and played it. So then after that, when it moved to West End, so it opened in Broadway in 64, opened at West End in 65, and Mary Martin, who originally had turned down the role, played Dolly at the West End. And then we have Barbara Streisand, like you mentioned, in the movie. We have Pearl Bailey, which we'll talk about more in a little bit, 75. And then when it was revived in 2017, and when it was revived in 2017, we had Bette Midler. And then Bernadette Peters took over when Bette Midler left. And then on the tour was Betty Buckley, who I got to see and was really good.
And then even then, like, they tried to keep the big names up with replacements. Like, they had Ethel Merman in the original cast, Ginger Rogers, Thelma Carpenter, Phyllis Diller. And those were just, like, replacements for Dolly in the original. In the most recent revival, Donna Murphy replaced Bernadette Peters after she left. But the one that I think we need to mention is the second West End revival with Danny LaRue. Yes, Danny LaRue is actually a very well-known drag performer, and I think this is the perfect show to have the lead female a drag role.
Yeah, I had never heard of this before. Like, I had never heard of him. I'd never heard about him playing this character. Like, I knew some of the other names beforehand before doing the research, and when he came up, and then, did you watch? Like, there was a few videos. Okay, I watched one of them, and I was just like, this is so cool.
I feel like it makes sense, like, thinking about Dolly as a person and sort of her character. I feel like taking it the drag route is great.
Because she is, like, she's just such a big character. Like, not just, like, she's a big character to play, but, like, I mean, like, Dolly Levi personality is, like, it's a big character. And we saw all these names and these big people that play. Like, it takes, like, a name to play it.
Yeah, I think that's why the producers were like all about trying to get big names to play the role, because she has big shoes to fill. There we go. We said it. So one thing that we have mentioned before is that they did a all black cast of the show, which I believe was actually it was part of the original run, but everybody was just replaced with black actors.
From what I read, is it something like that? Like, once ticket sales were starting to decline, that's what they ended up doing, was sort of making it this, like, new with black cast.
Mm-hmm. And a lot of people were saying that it, like, completely rejuvenated the show, which I think is awesome.
So I have such mixed feelings about this. So I love it, obviously. That was one of, if you go back to our Tony episode, this was one of the videos that I had picked of performances. They do end up giving Pearl Bailey a special Tony Award in 1986, and that's awesome. But what bugs me, and it's just, I know we can't fix it, and it's just the way theater was, but it's also kind of the way theater still is. Why couldn't she have just gotten a regular Tony? Why couldn't she have just gotten a regular Tony nomination? I guess it's because technically it was in the same, like, run, like, you know.
Yeah.
So I guess that's why. But it's just, you know, I was trying to find articles about it, and I was trying to find more information, and unfortunately there's not a lot out there. But one article that I did find that kind of talked about it, they were talking about how, I mean, it was 1968. I mean, there was still, obviously, still racism, and there was still, you know, we were in the middle of a war then. There's a difference between having a show that just originates a black actor versus taking an all-white show and completely changing it with all black characters. And that was what they did. And so there was, which is not a big deal, you know, like nowadays we're like, okay, whatever, good, give us that diversity. But then it was just like, oh my God, like, you can't do that. And so, you know, having Carol Channing, and if you watch that Tony's award thing, you know, she's like, I originated this role, and it's great. Look how great Pearl Bailey is, and we love her. And so having that is awesome, but they just needed it on there. And I wish there was more information on it. And again, I wish we could say that theater was more diverse than it is now. What, 60? So 40, I can do math. 50 years ago? 60 years ago? God, it's like 60 years ago.
Yeah.
How the fuck do we still not have more diversity?
Yeah, literally. Literally.
But I think that really shows something special about this show, too, that they did have two separate performances that are just so different than what the original is, which is really cool. You know, we had Pearl Bailey, we had Danny LaRue. Mm-hmm. At a time where, like, now it's like, okay, yeah, sure, whatever, but this was the 60s and 80s.
Yeah, yeah. One thing I do want to mention about the Pearl Bailey production is that Thelma Carpenter was doing all the matinees for the show. So Pearl would do, like, the night shows, and then Thelma Carpenter would do the day shows. And then one thing that I think is kind of funny, because it was the original production, B.B. Osterwald, who was the standby for Dolly in the original production, would often replace Pearl Bailey. But B.B. Osterwald is a blonde-haired, blue-eyed woman. So there'd be times where she would go in with that cast, and I just... I don't... It just seems so strange to me. I just, like, why couldn't they, could Thelma not do that performance? Like, come on. But I read that and I started cracking up. So the music has gone on a whole journey itself. But before we get into that, let's talk about some of our favorite songs. So I did 6 instead of 5 like I normally do. It Put My Hand In, It Takes a Woman, Put On Your Sunday Clothes, Penny in My Pocket, Elegance, and Hello Dolly. I didn't put Before the Parade Passes on here, but also Before the Parade Passes by.
Okay, now I don't feel so bad because I put 5, mm-hmm. and even then I was like, oh, I'm going to try to cut it down to 3, and I was like, well, I'll just have Berkeley go first. And even still, because it was tough. Yeah, I mean, like I said, I love this album. I'm trying to think, I don't think there's a single song in that I'm like, oh, this one. Put On Your Sunday Clothes, obviously, that's... Besides Hello Dolly, that's like the other big one. I like Dancing. I think it's really pretty, so I put that one on. Elegance is just, it's great. Hello Dolly, it's the show song. And I really like So Long, Dearie. I just like the sass of it at the end, you know, like, it's kind of a slow start, but then she's just like, you know, you can snuggle up to your old cash register. And she's just so sassy, and I think that's a really good embodiment of when we were talking, like we just said a little bit ago, about how Dolly is just such a like larger than life character and person. You really see it. I think you see it more in So Long, Dearie than actually any other song, because she's just like, it's fine. Like, she's just got that sass.
She really does. I'm pretty sure with all those songs, we literally just hit the whole show.
Yeah, I think we might have skipped like Penny in My Ear Pocket.
No,
and
I
Call
mentioned
on Dolly,
that.
And that's about it.
I think Call on Dolly because I hit Penny in My Pocket.
Oh. I feel like we're missing one more. Motherhood.
So a number of songs were cut before opening on Broadway. Like I said, the tryouts were a little rough. So World Take Me Back, Love Look in My Window were both cut. But then they added them back in when Ethel Merman joined the cast, which is a very rare thing to do. But because the show was written for Ethel Merman, I'm sure those songs were written with Ethel Merman in mind. They were like, we want her to sing this song. So they threw it back in there. Another song that was cut was Elegance. It was cut for time, but they added it back in the most recent Broadway production. And I mean, you saw the tour, and I guess they just do it in front of the curtain.
Do you mean, I think you mean Penny in Your My Pocket.
Oh, do I?
Yeah.
I might.
But yeah, they just do it in front of the curtain because it's the song they do right at the beginning of Act Two.
Yes. I mean Penny in My Pocket. So I did sort of tease earlier the drama with Before the Parade Passes By. This is like some Smash level stuff going on here. Like, I was reading this and I was like, oh, okay. So the song was originally not in the show. And while they did their tryouts in Detroit, they had 2 tryouts, one in Detroit, one in Washington, D.C. The director invited Charles Strauss and Lee Adams to consult them on improvements. The producer knew this was happening, but Jerry Herman had absolutely no idea. They don't mention anything about the book writer knowing, but I'm sure if Jerry Herman didn't know, he also didn't know. The pair suggested that they fix the ending of Act One, and they wrote the song Before the Parade Passes By and gave it to the director. When they opened in Washington, D.C., a different number with the same name written by Jerry Herman was put into the show. Yikes. So Strauss and Adams threatened to sue the production, and they got a songwriting credit. And the whole situation led to a number of feuds between Strauss and Adams, and then another between Strauss, Adams, and Grauer Champion, the director. And it was a whole thing. However, to this day, if you look up the song Before the Parade Passes By, it's still accredited to Strauss, Adams, and Herman. That's a little fun drama for you. I really enjoyed it. So there are a number of cast albums. You have the original cast album, the London cast, the All Black cast, the movie, the 1994 cast, and the 2017 Broadway cast. There's also a French recording I found on Spotify, and I listened to it a little bit. I was like, this is interesting. And then the original cast recording was recently, 2002, not really recently anymore, I guess. They were inducted into the Grammy Hall of Fame. Did you listen to any other of the recordings at all?
I did. So I figured, especially since this is a show I already like and know, and since I already listened to the 2017 one so much, I was like, all right, let me check out the other ones. So I started with the Carol Channing one. It almost makes me wonder, I feel like we talked about this with Anything Goes too, how I feel like the older shows have almost a sort of like grating sound to their voices. And I'm not trying to be like, Carol Channing sucks, because clearly she's great. But like, there's just something like, not what you hear now. And then it just makes me wonder if in like 50 years, when people are listening back to our Broadway things, you know, like ones like Hamilton or Dear Evan Hansen, you know, things that started during our times, if like that sound is going to sound so weird, and they're gonna be like, oh, what is this old people singing? But I listened to probably about half of hers, and then I listened to about half of Pearl Bailey's.
Okay. I did. Those were the two I listened to. I like just in the background. I also listened to the movie. I hated it a lot. I'm sorry, Barbara. She's good, but I don't want her to play Dolly. Oh, God, we're going to get so much hate for that. But I was not into it. Sorry. Which also, I think it's so funny, sort of how, speaking of Barbara Streisand, I think it's so funny how this all sort of works out, because Hello Dolly beat Funny Girl, which Barbara Streisand was in. And then she goes on to play Dolly in the movie.
Yeah. So for the Tonys, we'll talk about them in just a second. But those were like the two big ones, were Funny Girl and Hello Dolly. And Funny Girl got nominated for 8. Hello Dolly got nominated for 10. And I think those 8 overlap with the 10. And I mean, Hello Dolly did great at it. And then she ended up going, and I was reading stuff about it too, because people were asking, like, I was trying to find stuff about like, why didn't Carol Channing play her? And it was just, she just didn't have the star power. That's what it was. Like, Barbara Streisand is a star, like already was a star. And Carol Channing is, I mean, she's a Broadway star. It's a little bit different. And it's one of the things too, where people were like, Barbara Streisand was too young. I haven't watched the movie in a million years, but Barbara Streisand's too young to be playing, was too young at the time to be playing Dolly.
I think, I'm glad you mentioned that, because I think that's another really good thing with this show. A lot of the times, the older ladies are like the mother figures or the grandmother figures or like the evil people. But in this show, she gets to be the star. And I think that's great. I love that a lot. But yeah, even listening to the recording, I didn't watch the movie, but I listened to the recording of the movie. And I just, it's almost too pretty, if that makes sense. Like, she has a good voice. I don't know. It's not my thing. It's not my thing. I'm not going to say anymore because I don't want to get hate death threats. We mentioned the Tonys and they were nominated. Hello Dolly won 10 Tony noms, which tied with South Pacific for the most Tonys won. And then the two shared that title for 37 more years until The Producers came out in 2001 and swept with 12. Just some other like really big award type things with this show. The album reached the Billboard number 1 but was replaced a week later by Louis Armstrong's version of Hello Dolly, which I think is kind of funny. So my other thought is they changed Hello Dolly, the title of the show, after Louis Armstrong recorded this and released it. So did they change the name after the show had already opened?
I don't know.
Right? I'm wondering if that happened or if he recorded, I don't know when he recorded it. I should have looked more into this, but I'm wondering if it was something like it was a tryout thing and he maybe like saw it or heard about it during tryouts or Washington, D.C.
The video says that I have is him performing in 1965, okay, the year after. But I would imagine it had to have been before it made it to Broadway, because I feel like they would have had a bigger, there'd be more talk about the fact that it randomly changed its name in the middle of it. You know, like I feel like it would have said it more on the Wikipedia instead of just kind of being like a throw off line.
So they have a Wikipedia page for it. He released it in 1964, and it was recorded December 3rd, 1963. So it's very possible it had to happen before Broadway then. Oh, this just in. He recorded it in 1963. He made the demo for the song's publisher to use to promote the show. So then when it opened, like, literally a month later, not even a month, January 16th, 64, it had already been changed to Hello Dolly. So it was a fast thing. I didn't realize that it was used for a demo. Wow, that's cool. That was a fun little thing. So obviously the title song is extremely popular and a number of people have produced covers. Like there's a whole list of people. Frank Sinatra, Ella Fitzgerald, Liza Minnelli, Marvin Gaye, my favorite Dolly Parton. And I'm just like, I think it's so cool. I love that. I love that a song has that power and can be covered by that many people. I didn't look into the other productions of it, but I looked into the original production, and a lot of the critics were saying that Carol Channing was really what held the show together, and the story and the music and the book just didn't live up to Carol Channing, which I think is interesting because it's such a beloved show.
Just a couple other like minor. I always have like these random little things. I'm like, I don't know where to say them. Obviously, the show, when we see shows that are older, they're constantly just have random references and things. But my favorite is you can see parts of Put On Your Sunday Clothes and WALL-E.
Oh.
Yeah, it's the, like, if you remember, like, I don't know if you remember the movie, but, like, he has, like, the old VHS, and he's all constantly watching, like, this part. And he even, like, has a part where he's, like, doing, like, the dancing hat and all that. So that's just, I think that's probably the biggest reference of it, besides, like, all the people singing in the title song. I would say that's probably one of the bigger pop culture references of it, because they have that part in the movie, and they played a few times.
I love that. That's so cute.
And then just a couple of the other things that I found. There was an article that was talking about it, and I probably should have mentioned this earlier, but someone said that it was the Hamilton of its time, just as far as, like, tickets sold out instantly, and it remained the hot ticket item for years. Like, it had a good, solid run where it was just, like, sold out over and over and over. Obviously, now it's, like, looking at Hamilton, looking at it, it's not the same, but, you know, you figure for 64 and onward, like, that's pretty impressive.
Mm-hmm.
And then one of the other things that I was just like, what? Is that Carol Channing sang at the Super Bowl halftime twice in Super Bowl IV and Super Bowl VI. And now you think about it and you're like, can you imagine if they're like, all right, cool, the Super Bowl. Oh, who's playing in the halftime show? Oh, it's Ben Platt or Lin-Manuel Miranda. Like, people would lose their shit.
They would. They would go crazy.
And it's not, again, this isn't like, oh, she sang the national anthem at the beginning. No, she performed the halftime show twice.
Do you know what she sang?
I don't know. Okay. I should have looked more into it. I was just too stuck on this. I was like, what?
I did not know that.
I mean, I would be so for a musical theater Super Bowl halftime show.
Remember when Carol Channing was the first Super Bowl halftime show celebrity performer? She was the first? What? She was the first celebrity performer at the Super Bowl in 1970. She wasn't the main focus of the Super Bowl halftime show, though, with most of it being centered around the Southern University Marching Band performing a tribute to Mardi Gras and a reenactment of the 1815 Battle of New Orleans. However, she sang When the Saints Go Marching In. What was the other time?
Super Bowl 4 and 6.
4 and 6. Okay, what was it? This was 4, I think? Super Bowl 6. The halftime show for Super Bowl VI was a salute to Louis Armstrong, and it had Ella Fitzgerald, Carol Channing, Al Hurt, and the U.S. Marine Corps.
I love that.
Yeah, that's really cool. I wish we had
fun things like that.
So let's get to our ratings. So I sort of struggled with this. I thought about doing, like, parade passing by, but I just, meh. So I decided to rate this out of perfect matches. So, I think I know what yours is now. Okay, no, that's also a good one. I don't think it's yours, but okay, anyways. So I'm rating it out of perfect matches. I think I'm going to give it an 8 out of 10. I think it's a really good show. I haven't seen it, so I can't speak to that. But from what I do know, I think it's a really good show. I think I would be interested to see the show so I can hear the book a little more. Obviously, I did not watch a slime tutorial for this one. I should have. But I think an 8 out of 10, yeah. That was really bad. I struggled with that.
I know. I was just trying to think. I was like, do I want to give it this rating? But I'm trying to think. I'm like, what issues do I have with it? And for me, I don't. Like, I love the music. I love the story. It works really well. I think the fact that it had some very notable, not just the white women notable cast, but it has some very specific cast during times where that's not common. So I'm gonna give it 10 out of 10. Hey. Ribbons down my back.
I almost did that one.
I like panicked. I was like, oh crap, I don't have one. And then I was like, what do I do?
That's literally you every week. We get to this point and you're like, I don't have one. The other one that I thought, the one that came to mind while I was talking was Pennies in My Pocket.
Another good one would have been Stuffed Whales.
Yes. So if they want to interact with us, where can they find us?
So you can email us at mtbcpodcast for musical theater book club podcast at gmail.com. You can find us on Twitter at mtbcpodcast. We post all the videos and articles that we usually refer to. Or you can find us on TikTok or Instagram. We just post fun theater stuff there.
We have fun on both those.
Yeah.
We have fun on all of them. Awesome. Don't forget to rate, review, and subscribe. Share with your friends. Share with your enemies. Share with your dog. I like dogs. Share with your cats, because Sarah likes cats. I hope you have a good week, and don't forget to catch the parade as it passes by.